I'm Dream Queen. You're in the cab with me, and my friend Iggy Mac is here. Before I bring him into the conversation, I wanted to set up this sermon that we're going to be reading from today. We're back in the book club, and this time we're looking at A Knock at Midnight, inspiration from the great sermons of Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., edited by Claiborne Carson and Peter Halloran. And each sermon is framed with an introduction by another prominent thinker or minister. This one is introduced by Dr. Wyatt T. Walker. And the sermon for today is Rediscovering Lost Values. And I just wanted to read a couple of passages from the introduction to sort of set it up. On page number one, in the introduction, Dr. Wyatt T. Walker writes, "In Rediscovering Lost Values, Dr. King demonstrates the pronounced, highly ethical and moral dynamic that propelled his ministry and the movement as the moral leader of the United States in this century. King's overriding concern was this: is our movement right and moral? Throughout my long association with Dr. King, it was always arresting to notice his devotion to reconciliation, not victory. Reconciliation and not victory. This sermon was a launching pad to his keen awareness of the pervasive moral dilemma of the West and the world." Skipping to the bottom of page two, Wyatt writes, "The persuasiveness of King's preaching style is evident in that he appeals to the mind as well as the heart." And I just want to say that again, I've said it over and over again, they told us who they are, the oppressors and the colonizers. They search to grab our hearts and minds. And it is our job to take those back and guard them fiercely against corruption, okay? And then I'm going to move to page number three. In closing this introduction, Dr. Wyatt T. Walker writes, "Some years ago, John Ansborough and his colleagues were developing what became an interesting, though imprecise, philosophical biography of Dr. King. In the course of pursuing their inquiry, they asked this writer, whose writings influenced Martin Luther King Jr. most? My answer was Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Ansborough confessed that with more than a score of interviews of King's teachers and close associates, no one had offered a similar reply. The basis of Martin Luther King's ministry and mission was the ethics and morality of the crucified carpenter from Galilee. This early sermon validates that assessment, as do all of his later efforts. Despite the now legendary oratorical gifts that King developed in his post-Montgomery career, first and foremost, he was an unapologetic proclaimer of the gospel of Jesus of Nazareth." You ready to talk about Jesus, Iggy Mac?
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, I have to say, I liked your beginning intro this morning, talking about, hey, for people who are a little bit afraid of the J word.
Trigger warning.
You
Big
know,
J.
I'm a little surprised that I'm sitting here, because, you know, I too am another victim of colonialism, where Jesus has been used to influence this patriarchal system that we're in.
Mm-hmm.
And given the book and the chapter and having read through it, I was also taken back by, you know, how, you know, I don't think I can say that one word, but corrupted, you know, the message of Jesus, actually the message of God, really has become. You know, it was used interestingly enough, I feel to keep us all going in line. You know, a lot of things that Bell Hooks is talking about when we get into all this.
Go ahead, you open the door now.
Yeah, I did.
Come on in.
You know, I was there for that book club too.
Yes, you were.
Let me just take it back. Thank you so much for having this book club. Thank you so much for working with people community-wise and to expanding our consciousness together. Because ultimately, if we are going to overcome any of this, we're going to have to do it together. We can't do it alone.
Right on.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Let's just step back, though, and we'll get into all this detail, I'm sure.
Well, and I want to thank you for your support and everyone who's been a part of this process, all the listeners and people. And, you know, I'm just going to put it out there. Thank you for helping provide books for people. Because a lot of people want to participate, but some of us are limited in funds, and we've been able to order some books from a discount bookstore and distribute them to some of our members who want to participate. And any listener out there, you can find me on dreamqueen_3am on Instagram, and just shoot me a message if you have something to say or you want to be a part of this and participate, maybe come on the show. Just look for me on Instagram, and I'm friends with KMRD. It'll be easy to find me.
And I absolutely want to help you too. If for some reason the underscore throws you off and you just can't find Dream Queen,
yeah, look up Vicky Mack.
Vicky Mack on Insta and message me, and I would love to help to get you a part of this book, to get you in the book club, and to bring you in. You know, I don't see an end to our circle.
And really, how you got into helping provide books was because we're finding that the two books that we've picked so far were not available in Santa Fe at all.
That's right. I looked everywhere and I couldn't find them. And I don't think it was because they're just flying off the shelves. I mean, I called every single one of the places. And, you know, doing the work is hard. And finding these books was hard, you know. So it was part of the journey, I believe.
Yes. Yes. And I even went into the Santa Fe Public Library's website, hoping to steer you that way. And it wasn't there. It wasn't even in their online library.
Wow.
So we had to reach way back. And the 90s wasn't that long ago. You know, this book and All About Love came out in the 90s, and it's can't find them around here.
Yeah.
So so you were talking about All About Love just briefly. Did you want to finish that thought?
No, because I know we're going to get there. I know that without going into it, because as we start looking into this first chapter of A Knock at Midnight, it's going to become evident. And if it's not, don't worry, because I'll be like talking about it. I'm sure you'll be talking about it. But right off the bat, I mean, fairly early into this chapter, you'll see why that's also on my mind.
Yes, I mean, and I'm going to tell you that I'd like to just go ahead and maybe bring Bell Hooks to the front, because what I'd like to do is talk with people about God, you know, as we get started with the sermons of Dr. King. The mentions of Jesus and God, I think, is going to be a bit of a stumbling block for some folks. I was brought up Baptist. I was brought up by a Baptist minister who, quite like King, probably was quite influenced by Dr. King. My grandfather preached a lot from the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And look at me, I got two books. I'm double fisting right here. So I want to say that, you know, he was a beacon in my life. He loved me. You know, I came out as gay, as a lesbian, really, when I was about 13 years old. I knew for myself for about a year, but I was really struggling with it, being in a religious household and going to church every Sunday and this and that, and witnessing the discomfort of my life. My grandfather told me that he was going to love me no matter what, and that he might not understand, you know, what was going on with me in that department. He still loved me because God is love.
Yeah.
And folks may not understand where we get that statement from. I didn't really understand it fully until last night, you know, digging deep. And I went back to Bell Hooks Chapter 6 is values, living by a love ethic. And I felt like they were directly related, this chapter and this sermon, because they're both around values. And bell hooks writes on page 92, "I am especially fond of the biblical passage in the first epistle of John, which tells us, there is no fear in love, but perfect love casteth out fear, because fear hath torment. He that feareth is not made perfect in love." And I was like, okay, so is God perfect love? I was feeling like God is energy. It's a source energy that is running through all of us. The energy of creation is not a white guy in the sky. Sorry to break it to all you white guys, but it's not a white guy with a beard and white robe sitting up in the sky.
That's right.
God is an energetic, a life force that runs through us. But, you know, that still didn't seem like enough to me. And so I grabbed this Bible that Bad DJ gave to me, and I found the first epistle of John. This is the New American Standard Bible. And I look at the first epistle of John, 1 John chapter 1, verse 4. I'm going to go verse 4 through 7. "And these things we write so that our joy may be made complete. And this is the message we have heard from him and announced to you, that God is light, and in him there is no darkness at all. If we say that we have fellowship with him and yet walk in the darkness, we lie and do not practice the truth. But if we walk in the light as he himself is in the light, we have fellowship with one another, and the blood of Jesus, his son, cleanses us from all sin." And then skipping down to chapter 2, verse 9. "The one who says he is in the light and yet hates his brother is in the darkness until now. The one who loves his brother abides in the light, and there is no cause for stumbling in him. But the one who hates his brother is in the darkness and walks in the darkness and does not know where he is going, because the darkness has blinded his eyes." Does that frighten you?
No. You know, I want to say I really appreciate you had sent me excerpts of this last night and talking about what God is. You know, one thing that there's two things I think that we should talk about with the audience real quick, you know, is that language is very important. And the people who framed, you know, this Bible back in the day, whatnot, also understood that. And while it's very important, it's also very important to understand, you know, behind the meaning. So one of the things that you were doing with this is you were skipping through, you know, and you had certain chapters or what do they call that? I'm sorry.
Passages,
thank you. Verses that you had isolated out of the work. And it reminded me, you know, especially with the words of he and him and things like that, that at one point, you know, that's a part of the patriarchy. That's written in there in order to give us something to focus on, right? Anthropomorphize or something.
Anthropomorphize.
And that's the word. Thank you. So, because it's hard to look at an essence and call that an all-knowing, all-being entity. And so we've turned them into a personified an entity. And the other thing I was really reminded on is that while there is the direct word of God, while love is ultimately what we're talking about, man did write this. And at one point, you know, man was using this to further their own patriarchy, to further their own, like, being and whatnot. But in the essence, when you take out, much like you were doing when you're going from verses, and we're going to exclude this one, we're going to talk about this one at a point, a lot of those actually did very much seem like man wrote that in there. they added more words and things that aren't so relevant. They fluffed it up a little bit. And ultimately, you know, it changes that message. But when you skip down and you're reading the passages of love, it starts making a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. You know, there's it. Anyways, I thought that was a beautiful take, actually, when I was just looking at your notes on this. And it was a beautiful reminder that there is a message in here, you know, and if we can look past certain things that might trigger us, mm-hmm. He, Almighty, you know,
the Lord,
yeah. The Lord is one I'm having a hard time with lately.
It's that British angle.
Yeah.
It's that that church, the British colonizer angle.
Yeah.
You know.
And that doesn't take away from the message of love, mm-hmm. especially if we can, you know, learn to read between the lines, learn that there's an angle in there that is just meant to keep this a little bit unknowing from us, to confuse it. But ultimately, we know love. We feel it. We've all felt something, whether it was with another person, of an event, something that made us feel so filled up within ourselves. You know, we understand love. But then when we add all these words and other things on the outside and around it, we kind of lose that meaning, I think.
Do we understand it?
No, I don't. You're right. That's a good point.
That's why we started the whole thing.
I don't think that we understand it.
We understand feeling, like, you know.
Yeah.
Because, and I just challenge it because, you know, there's still a lot of people out there who haven't finished the Bell Hooks. And, you know, the New Visions part of it. Love isn't just a feeling. It's right. Not that it's not in the body, you know. It's in the consciousness and it's in the will as an act. I mean, that was the take from the book. Now everybody has freedom to think love is whatever they want to, you know. But
yeah.
I am very much working toward the love as an action and as a striving. So trying to stop saying like, I love this car, you know, mm-hmm. you know, it's, I, but to pinpoint the feelings that I'm feeling, to say I am appreciative of the luxury that I get to enjoy by having this car mm-hmm. or, you know, I get a kick out of this, the sound system in this thing, you know?
Right.
But again, it goes back to what you were saying about language and being conscious of what we're saying so that we're very precise about our meanings. And it's you know,
that's
none of us are perfect. It's tricky for all of us,
I know.
You know, and it's going to be because we're working on decolonizing our minds. What you were talking about, it made me think about the, Jung, Carl Jung, and bringing in myth, ritual, and archetypes. Mm. And in religion and spirituality, it's very important to look at these entities that we may worship or give homage to there as energies. And we personify them due to our deep, deep human history of storytelling. And we have, before the written word and what we understand right now as science, and we learn through storytelling. And so as we told stories to teach each other and to comfort each other, we gave human attributes to energetics. And
that's right.
So then we incorporate where these energetics may have originated, and we incorporate ritual to honor these energies within ourselves and to continue to bring us back. So the communion, the act of sacrifice, these sort of things are part of that way back human history. And when we find in ourselves what Jung calls the archetype, which has become really quite embedded in our consciousness, you know, it's really fascinating to look at, as is to say that these energies don't only exist outside of ourselves, but within our bodies and minds.
Right.
You know.
Right. And that was actually exactly what I started discovering in the first chapter, was when I started looking at this less as a direct story about three people walking in the desert, right? I'm sure we'll get to what I'm talking about here.
Oh, yeah, we're
going to
get to that. Yeah,
less as that, and I started looking at this as a parable, as a metaphor.
Right.
It really touched inside me.
Right.
And I started to understand that this is a way to really embed, good moral teachings into the psyche.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Is because it's one thing to like think of these things as a bunch of words, but to have a whole movie play out in your head, have a whole image that you can put behind it to like keep you going. It's another way to completely remember these and carry it with you. I was thoroughly impressed.
Right. And I'm going to just say really quickly here that reading from the King Institute at .stanford.edu, this is a Stanford University website, Dr. King, he pursued his doctoral studies in systematic theology at Boston University's graduate school. King's desire to study at Boston University was influenced by his increasing interest in personalism. Okay, and this is directly related to what you're saying. Mm-hmm. Personalism, a philosophy that emphasizes the necessity of personal religious experience in understanding God. So beyond what's on the page, but to say, how have I experienced God?
Yeah.
And this parable of Jesus, Mary, and Joseph when in the caravan between Jerusalem and Nazareth is really emphasizing, I think, an experience of the young God energy.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Should I read?
I think you should. I think we should fill in everybody what we're talking about. Maybe it's time. Quit talking parables ourselves.
Well, yeah, we'll just let Dr. King talk parable. Yeah. This is In the Cab, the book club. We are reading from A Knock at Midnight, sermons from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. I'm Dream Queen, and I'm here with Icky Mack.
Hello.
This sermon was delivered at Second Baptist Church in Detroit, Michigan, on the 28th of February, 1954. My man, this is almost 70 years ago, to the day, almost. Wow. This week.
That's powerful.
Bless, right?
Exactly.
I almost started this last week, but I wanted to give the whole 2 hours to Nina, and it just really adds up, doesn't it? So I'm going to read the first couple of paragraphs and we'll see where we break off and come back, because I wasn't going to read the entire parable. I did find the Bible passages in Luke that King was referencing. In the words of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., I want you to think with me this morning from the subject, Rediscovering Lost Values. There is something wrong with our world, something fundamentally and basically wrong. I don't think we have to look too far to see that. I'm sure that most of you would agree with me in making that assertion. And when we stop to analyze the cause of our world's ills, many things come to mind. We begin to wonder if it is due to the fact that we don't know enough. But it can't be that, because in terms of accumulated knowledge, we know more today than men have known in any period of human history. We have the facts at our disposal. We know more about mathematics, about science, about social science, and philosophy than we've ever known in any period of the world's history. So it can't be because we don't know enough. And then we wonder if it is due to the fact that our scientific genius lags behind. That is, if we have not made enough progress scientifically. Well, then it can't be that, for our scientific progress over the past years has been amazing. Man, through his scientific genius, has been able to dwarf distance and place time in chains, so that today it is possible to eat breakfast in New York City and supper in London, England. Back in about 1753, it took a letter 3 days to go from New York City to Washington. And today, you can go from here to China in less time than that. It can't be because man is stagnant in his scientific progress. Man's scientific genius has been amazing. I think we have to look much deeper than that if we are to find the real cause of man's problems and the real cause of the world's ills today. If we are to really find it, I think we will have to look in the hearts and souls of men. And we skip down to the bottom of the page. The problem is with man himself and man's soul. We haven't learned how to be just and honest and kind and true and loving. And that is the basis of our problem. Now, I want to draw that right back to bell hooks. You know, in chapter 6, she is talking about the cowardice. And I have to find my page because I kind of skipped around in here. But the idea that the values of a love ethic. And at the end of the chapter is a really easy place to find. Hooks says, to live our lives based on the principles of a love ethic, showing care, respect, knowledge, integrity, and the will to cooperate. I think those are great values.
Yeah, that's exactly what defines the love ethic.
Mm-hmm.
Care. Showing care, respect, knowledge, integrity, and the will to cooperate.
Do you have any ethics that, anything you'd like to add to those principles?
You know, I'm not invited here because I am, you know, a scholarly genius on this. I think I'm invited here because I'm like most people. And, you know, I'm not perfect. I don't have all the answers, but I have to say that strikes me in my core. That strikes me in my heart of all places. I mean, as we're reading through both of these, A Knock at Midnight and All About Love, as we're looking at like where our core ethics, you know, lie, I have to constantly remind myself, you know, I'm having trouble with the lords in my life, you mm-hmm. know, the ones who have the properties, the ones that have the abilities. And I find myself slipping, like, because, you know, my constant reaction to this is the same reaction that I'm getting, mm-hmm. you know, shut out, mm-hmm. you know, one way or the other. And I find this extremely challenging, but exactly right, that the only way to combat that and to get over that is by having a love ethic, by reminding myself that, you know, okay, this isn't something that happens to me. This is something that's happening for me. This is an ability, this is a time for me to reflect on like where my problems are and let my outer light shine. You know, what is that? That's the last words of that chapter on bell hooks. When we let our light shine, we draw to us and are drawn to other bearers of light. We are not alone.
Mm-hmm.
And so often, you know, I forget this. You know, something bad happens to me, and so now I'm feeling bad. And what am I doing? I'm darkening the world.
Mm.
Now, you know, oftentimes we find that like we're not met with the same grace that was expected of us. You know what I mean?
Mm.
Like some people just, you have problems. Well, here's my problems.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and because I'm, you know, just on an extreme, I might get all hurt and say, oh, they're worried about their dishwasher. I'm worried about a place to live.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. and I think it's better for me to take it back. And I'm starting, this is, they're giving me pause. I'm working with this all the time.
Mm.
But I got to let that light shine. Mm. We got to let that light shine. We got to give people their places, you know, of hurt and anguish. And so that we can all heal through it together. That's, That's what I've been working on with the Lords I'm having trouble with. Mm. You know, at the very beginning of this chapter on Bell Hooks, the values, living by love ethic, she's quoting Marianne Williamson. Mm,
thank you for getting that. Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to requote the entire part. Mm-hmm. One thing that I do try to remind myself is there is no love of power for power's sake. Mm-hmm. Right? So what is this love of power that people have an affliction of? It's really a fear. They talk about this later, and Bell Hooks talks about this later in the book. But it's really about themselves. They want to better themselves. They seek this power for fear of not having.
Well,
it's not because they want that power. I mean, some people I'm sure want power, but
it's very interesting for you listeners who have not checked out All About Love, New Visions. The framework is beautiful. She touches on all of this throughout all of the chapters, and the chapter about greed and the void that we have and all of the different things that we try to fill that void with. And one of those things is power and domination,
right?
You know, because we feel lacking inside. It's also covered in this sermon. Dr. King talks about the accidental turning from God, turning from the light. Really quickly, I want to go in order. And so listeners, I told Icky Mac I was going to let him out here. You really have to go at 10. Because
I don't really have to go at 10.
Because DJ Barnacle asked me to fill in again, and we have a little bit of extra time. And I'm really glad for the pace at which we're going here, picking apart a lot of things, and we might just go over a little bit. Sure. I was working on containing it to an hour for the ease of listenability and not to exhaust us all. So we'll just see how it goes. But I really want to do a little foreshadowing and say that capitalism, it has left us all wounded and damaged and That's looking right. in the wrong places for mm-hmm. fulfillment.
That's right.
So really, let's go and tell the story of which Dr. King frames this. Page number 7. Our situation in the world today reminds me of a very popular situation that took place in the life of Jesus. It was read in the scripture for the morning, found over in the second chapter of Luke's gospel. And for my Bible friends out there, this would be Luke chapter 2, verse 40 through 52. I read the entire gospel of Luke last night. Well, not the entire gospel. I'm sorry, the whole second chapter. And it was quite interesting, and it really was covered from the birth of Jesus all the way up into this time, which is he's about 12 years old. It was a pretty quick passage. You remember when Jesus was about 12 years old, there was a custom of the feast. Jesus's parents took him up to Jerusalem, and there was an annual occasion, the feast of the Passover, and they went up to Jerusalem and they took Jesus along with them. And they were there a few days. And then after being there, they decided to go back home to Nazareth. And they started out, and I guess it was in the tradition in those days. And excuse me, I'm going to pause here for a second, where King frames it all in that patriarchal mindset. Now, this is not framed this way in the New American Standard Bible. It's not framed with Joseph, the father, in front. And, you know, this whole story of they started out, and I guess it was tradition that the father probably traveled in the front and the mother and the children behind. And I'm not here to challenge. Obviously, Dr. King has had degrees and studied deeply theology. But again, some institutional learning can corrupt our understanding of how things might have happened, because these institutions are set up by colonialists.
That's right.
So we put the man in his place at the front, and maybe in many traditions that was the case, but in many traditions it was not the case, and women led. One of the things that, as I was reaching through the Bible last night and just flipping through the Gospels, they were appalled The disciples were appalled that Jesus was talking to women.
Yeah.
They didn't know what to do with that. They're like, why is he talking to her? Like, what can we do for you? Jesus is like, you don't have to. Jesus is like, look, all God's children, you know?
He washes their feet in response.
I mean.
Right? You know?
So, you know, we have to, again, you know, you do our cross-referencing and think outside the box. But anyway, King is talking about the slow travels that they made because they didn't have buses and things. And he's really fluffing it up and making that story, taking us to the place, like you were saying in the movie, right. You know. And they left Jerusalem going on back to Nazareth. And I imagine they walked a little while. And they didn't look back to see if everybody was there. But then the scripture says they went about a day's journey and they stopped. I imagine to check up to see if everything was all right. And they discovered that something mighty precious was missing. They discovered that Jesus wasn't with them. Jesus wasn't in the midst. And so they paused there and looked and they didn't see him around. And they went on and started looking among the kinsfolk. And they went on back to Jerusalem and found him there in the temple with the doctors of the law. Now, the real thing that is to be seen here is this, that the parents of Jesus realized that they had left and that they had lost a mighty precious value.
Yeah.
They had sense enough to know that before they could go forward to Nazareth, they had to go backward to Jerusalem to rediscover this value.
That's it.
Sometimes, you know, it's necessary to go backward in order to go forward.
Right. This is where the book, this is where Jesus, where everything that I was worried about before just opened up for me.
Mm.
You know, that makes so much sense. And in everywhere that we look, so now what do I do? I go and flip back through Bell Hooks to start like looking back to what, you know, what had I missed earlier. And I'll be honest, I actually underlined a few other things.
Yes.
In re-looking at this, because back to what you were saying originally, you know, in framing this into a context, right? Well, maybe the father being at the head wasn't so much the thing, but what they're talking about was the current modern family tradition. And maybe the man leading is the way that they wanted to start that off with in this example. But maybe what they're saying is just like the way, well, for us, how America raises our families. You know, our kids should be seen and not heard type philosophy that is outdated. But, you know, that sense of like the providers, whether it be man or woman, you know, maybe that was just personified into a male for this, you know, passage of time. As you said, this new version doesn't put that there.
Well, yes.
And so maybe, you know, that's one thing that we're forgetting as a family unit, is another way I looked at this.
Well, and if you go back to the Bell Hooks, she talks about the damage that the mm-hmm. quote-unquote nuclear family has done
yes.
to actually the human being. You know, it's an isolating type of dynamic that puts the one person in charge of the whole, and it excludes the extended family mm-hmm. Because these people were traveling That's in right. a caravan.
Yes.
Okay. And so, you know, it's important to know that there were extended family there. You know, where's Jesus? I thought he was with you. Right. Oh, I thought he was with you. You know, oh Lord, we got to go back all the way to Nazareth and get Jesus.
And another way of looking at that, that caravan also becomes community.
It becomes community.
Exactly.
It already is. They didn't have, like, I mean, the things I left out were the modern conveniences. They didn't have things but each other.
That's right.
You know? I want to read from Luke chapter 2.
All right.
Verse 45 through 52. And when they did not find him, they returned to Jerusalem looking for him. Excuse me. And it came about that after 3 days, now they went looking for him for 3 days. And three is a very mystical number, is the number of creation, is the number of the Trinity. You know, we can go into numerology and all of these secret passages of all of the esoteric layers of the Bible, but that's a different show. They went looking for him for 3 days, and they found him in the temple, sitting in the midst of the teachers, both listening to them and asking them questions. And all who heard him were amazed at his understanding and his answers. And when they saw him, they were astonished. And his mother, okay, not enough credit given to the mothers.
That's right.
And his mother said to him, "Son, why have you treated us in this way? Behold, your father and I have been anxiously looking for you." And he said unto them, "Why is it that you were looking for me? Did you not know that I have been in my father's house?" And they did not understand the statement which he had made to them. And he went down with them and came to Nazareth, and he continued in subjection to them. And his mother treasured all these things in her heart. And Jesus kept increasing in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and men. And so in their search, their return back to Jerusalem to find him, they not only found their child, but they found wisdom.
Yeah. And they did this by looking back. Mm-hmm. Something, a lesson that they might have forgotten, one that they have overlooked, or one that they had thought they had moved past, quite literally mm-hmm. in this sense. And they had gone back to the place at which they started to find that there was a deeper meaning that they had overlooked, that they had walked past. It's a really beautiful metaphor, if that's the right use of the word metaphor. Yeah. But taking it outside, parable, thank you. For mm-hmm. taking it outside of all this, you know, so let's replace father with love, you know, or that energy, mm-hmm. right? Did you not know that I was in my loving place? And love is sitting here. If we look at Jesus as an example of an energy, you know, love is asking questions of the people who are partaking in love. Love is responding, you know, to those. And people were amazed because this is a pure idea in this spot. And it had going back to relook at this, you know, the other one before Mary like realizes, you know, what she's seen, you know, and before it fills her heart, you know, and understands that place in there. I just, I lost that track, but ultimately, it really helped me to like see this and try to replace these words with ones that weren't so rigid. Mm. Father, him, he, white guy in the sky, which it never says. But, you know, when I start replacing these things with, you know, the words that do make more sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, they, you know, the white guy in the sky imagery comes from the Renaissance art.
Right.
And the paintings and everything that were created with during the time of colonization, where they took these images and then planted them in every community all across Europe, Africa, and the New World, quote unquote, because they wanted to take the power away from indigenous people. I mean, you know, obviously Christianity comes out of Africa,
right?
And as people migrated, you know, yada, yada, yada. So, no, the Bible doesn't say white guy in the sky ever, but it is impressed on our consciousness because of colonization.
That's right.
And abuse. I also want to give another suggestion for a substitute for the word father, and that would be source energy.
Source energy.
Because as we are, like, right, if you could go into nature and be in the source's mm-hmm. house, so to speak, and receiving, Jesus was receiving the mysteries amongst the learned.
Right.
And it's very important to understand that he wasn't, the idea is that he wasn't born with all of the knowledge, but he did have a certain amount of intelligence, probably from past life experiences, because mm-hmm. as when you don't have TV and movies and these sugar cereals like this to kind of dull the senses, mm-hmm. we were much more pure in the very ancient times. And so we also sat at the feet of the elders and learned the mysteries.
Right.
You know, Father Sky, Mother Earth, all of these things have traveled with us throughout time.
Right. You know, it's another interesting thing. I just want to go back to the source energy and how we are all made in this image, right? It's like scientifically understood, or as far as I understand it and haven't seen it refuted, that we are all just stardust, right? That these are things that have transmuted. So from the source of, you know, what one current theory is, the Big Bang, we all came from a source energy that exploded into the universe, and we became up from that, right? So I think that was a beautiful analogy to replace father with source energy. That's what I think of just now. Thank you for that.
Oh, yeah, my pleasure. So let's go back to the sermon, and we're going to talk about the values. So Dr. King is talking about one or two of the values that he feels like have been left behind.
Yes.
And we're going to cover the first one, and before we have to go to a break. For those of you just joining, thank you. This is Dream Queen and Ikki Mack, and we are in the book club discussing A Knock at Midnight, the first sermon in the collection of sermons from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. called Rediscovering Lost Values. If we are to go forward and to make this a better world, we must rediscover these values we've left behind. The first is this. The first principle of value that we need to rediscover is this, that all reality hinges on moral foundations. In other words, that this is a moral universe and that there are moral laws of the universe just as abiding as the physical laws. I'm not so sure we all believe that. We never doubt that there are physical laws of the universe that we must obey. We never doubt that. And so we don't just jump out of airplanes or jump off of high buildings for the fun of it. We don't do that because we unconsciously know that there is a final law of gravitation. And if you disobey it, you'll suffer the consequences. We know that. Even if we don't know it in its Newtonian formulation, we know it intuitively, and so we just don't jump off the highest building in Detroit for the fun of it, because we know that there is a law of gravitation which is final in the universe. If we disobey it, we'll suffer the consequences. But I'm not so sure if we know that there are moral laws just as abiding as the physical law. I'm not so sure about that. I'm not so sure if we really believe that there is a law of love in this universe, and that if you disobey it, you'll suffer the consequences. I'm not so sure if we really believe that. Now, at least two things convince me that we don't believe that, that we have strayed away from the principle that this is a moral universe. The first thing is that we have adopted in the modern world a sort of relativistic ethic. Now, I'm not trying to use a big word here. I'm trying to say something very concrete, and that is that we have accepted the attitude that right and wrong are merely relative. Most people can't stand up for their convictions because the majority of people might not be doing it. See, everybody's not doing it, so it must be wrong. And since everybody is doing it, it must be right. A sort of numerical interpretation of what's right. You want to say something?
That's really so beautiful and true. And I guess one thing I want to add to that is that, you know, there's a difference between fearing jumping off the building. We don't jump off the building because we fear that we will land and die, that we don't jump out of airplanes because we, you know, we refuse to jump out of airplanes because of that, but we have an understanding, you know. And I just think that's really important, because a lot of what drives our society today is fear-based, you know, fear of not having enough, fear of not being loved, not fear of not having wholeness. And so it's really easy to look at this and say, you know, we fear this action, or we don't do this action because of we fear the consequences. But in there, you know, I would say that the reverse of that is that, you know, we scientifically understand the consequences. And so we respect it. We respect the tall building, and we're not just going to go haphazardly jump off for the fun of it. And that's a lot of going back to even talking about the ethical love practice of bell hooks. You know, so in on the second chapter, I'm sorry, on chapter 6, page 88, and the second page of the start of her chapter, she says, "Behaving unethically with no thought to the consequences of our actions is a bit like eating tons of junk food." All right. So while it may taste good in the end, the body is never really adequately nourished and remains in a constant state of lacking and longing. Our souls feel this lack when we act unethically, behaving in ways that diminish our spirits and dehumanize others. Skipping ahead a little bit. There it is. Just next page. "We are all subjugated to radical changes every day. We face them by moving through fear." So that is what I'm getting at with this, is that when we start looking at the practical, the moral foundations, and we stop looking at it as, you know, hey, we don't do that because we fear this, but we don't do that because we understand this, is a way to move forward. Because, well, that's really what that part struck me out as. You know, I think that, like, a lot of times we don't look at that in society. You know, we don't do this because we fear the actions of it. But no, we don't do this because that's morally incorrect. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, while the building gravitation is a physical law, there is a moral law that we have to, like, really start looking at. And it's not, you know, we don't go to work and do all this because we fear, well, that's a bad analogy. but that's what I was getting at, or that's what I hear partially in that.
Yes. King does address the group mindset in that passage.
Right.
And a lot of the fear is based on the result of, you know, the result of going against the group, going against colonization, going against the master, and the consequences of homelessness, yeah, of police brutality, of arrest. And we don't fear buildings. We don't fear gravity. Gravity is great. We mm-hmm. love gravity.
Does a lot for us.
We love gravity. We love to be, you know, inside of shelter, you know, but we do, like you said, understand what would happen if we test gravity, if we test the limitations of our bodies. You're going to get a splat.
Yeah.
And so, you know, just continuing that thought, and then I'm going to have to do a station ID and a funder. But King says, "I'm here to tell you this morning that some things are right and some things are wrong. Externally so, absolutely so. It's wrong to hate. It always has been wrong and always will be wrong. It's wrong in America. It's wrong in Germany. It's wrong in Russia. It's wrong in China. It was wrong in 2000 BC and is wrong in 1954 AD. It always has been wrong and it always will be wrong. It's wrong to throw our lives away in riotous living. No matter if everybody in Detroit is doing it, it's wrong." Mm-hmm. "It's always wrong, will be wrong, and it always has been wrong. It's wrong in every age, and it's wrong in every nation." So we all should reflect on that as we go about our lives, watching the news, picking sides in war, starving children is wrong, bombing, starving anybody, all of it is wrong.
You know, I know you got to do station ID. Give me one second. I just want to say that one thing I've always heard, and I'm sure many of you have heard this before, is that if all your friends would jump off the bridge, would you jump off with them? And the answer is, look at society. It kind of looks like we would.
Oh,
and it
kind
of looks like we do, unless we really address it and look at it differently.
Well, that's what we're here to do. That's what we're here to do, Iggy Mac.
That's what we're here.
So I'm going to go ahead and tell everybody thank you for tuning in. I'm Dream Queen. Been in the cab here with Iggy Mac. And now we are in the Ear Candy Hour for DJ Barnacle. Stay tuned. We're going to continue our conversation about A Knock at Midnight, inspiration from the great sermons of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. This is 96.9 FM, KMRDLP, Madrid, New Mexico. We've taken our concise conversation and stretched it out a little bit longer because we just couldn't hold back. I'm here with Iggy Mac, who is a fellow DJ here on KMRD, who is on Friday nights from 9 to midnight. We skipped this because we just dove right into the pool of understanding. And I want to thank you for getting up so early and being back here in the studio.
Well, this is important. I appreciate you having me, and I appreciate you inviting me. And that song really touched me. I'm not trying to be anything I'm not. And, I just want you to know, I slip up. I make mistakes. I fall down and all that. But I'm trying to be a better person, better than I was a year ago, better than I was a long time ago, better than I was yesterday. And I want to afford all of you the grace, and I just hope that you can work with me on that too. Mm. Thank you so much for the opportunities to be a better person.
Oh.
Everybody.
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 Everybody give Iggy Mac a chance. You've been in this town a long time. A
long time.
And you probably twice, 2.5 times as long as me. Hmm. And I will say that I've lived a handful of places in my life. And when I feel like people think they know me and I can't escape those preconceived notions of the person that they knew 10 years ago, I move.
Yeah.
It gets annoying to have to, it's very difficult to chisel out new ways of being and people who refuse to give you the space.
Right.
And I admire your tenacity, having pretty much grown into a full-on adult here.
I came here when I was 18. Mm-hmm. I was 6 months into my 18th year on this planet.
Wow.
And before that, I had just traveled. My mom raised me on the road. I was prematurely ejected from the house, and I went traveling on my own. And I found this place, and I loved it so much that I had to leave. And I went traveling again, and I went to both coasts. And every night I dreamt about being back here because there was something more. The people are great. I love all of you. That's one of the major reasons why I'm here. The land also really speaks to me. Mm-hmm. But that's another story for another day. Thank you for having me. Thank you for reluctantly having me.
Reluctant.
Well, some of these people.
Oh, in the town?
Yeah, well, I'm just teasing. Them. I'm just teasing.
They had their moments too, I'm sure. I wanted to touch on real quick. Crap, it was just right there. And then it went. It will be back. It was a quick thought on something that you said in the last hour. And oh man, and it was great. Anyway,
we'll be back.
It'll be back. So we are in the book club and we are reading A Knock at Midnight, inspiration from the great sermons of Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. This is week one. And this is the first sermon in the collection. So we're going to continue with rediscovering lost values, the lost values that Dr. King thinks we need to rediscover in order to come back into alignment with our purpose in humanity. The other thing is that we have adopted a sort of pragmatic test for right and wrong. Whatever works is right. If it works, it's all right. Nothing is wrong but that which does not work. If you don't get caught, it's right. Mm-hmm. And that's the attitude. It's all right to disobey the Ten Commandments, but just don't disobey the 11th. Thou shall not get caught.
Right.
That's the prevailing attitude in our culture. No matter what you do, just do it with a bit of finesse. you know, a sort of attitude of the survival of the slickest, not the Darwinian survival of the fittest, but the survival of the thickest, of the slickest. Whoever can be the slickest is the one who is right. It's all right to lie, but lie with dignity. It's all right to steal and to rob and to extort, but do it with a bit of finesse. It's even all right to hate, but just dress your hate up in the garments of love and make it appear that you are loving when you are actually hating. Mm. Man, and that right there, you know, that's the trigger button.
Yeah.
That's the button that people are like, oh, Lord, you said, Jesus, I ain't going to be listening to this because that's all hate.
Yeah.
And it's because people have dressed up their hate in the garment of Christ's love that has been so affected when they're beating and killing and abusing people that it makes it easy for us to turn away from a love ethic and a love consciousness because it's wrapped up in hate. And so it's vice versa, right? It's like a reversible cloak. You know, I love God, but I hate you because God told me to because of this thing you do or this way that you look or whatever.
You know, it reminds me a lot of like gossip too, right? So, you know, a lot of people come up and be like, oh, well, I really care about this person and they're having a hard time and they're, you know, doing all these things, but it's really just hateful. And they're just picking apart someone for their own, you know, whatever, enjoyment, maybe to get over their own insecurities. We could speculate all day long, but that's a very, you know, form of it where we oftentimes are like, I care, or, you know, I care about the unhoused people, so I donate to this company to do it. But when I see them on the street, you know, I look away. That's another form of like, you know, disguising our hate as love. And I you know, I personally have a hard time. I donate a lot. I give money to unhoused people a lot, actually. And I say this because I see myself in them. Having been there before, knowing that I'm at any minute, like, not far from there, you know, I got one foot in the same world that they're dwelling in, and I see myself in them. And that's why I do not give to big organizations. You know, I understand these organizations work. There's some great ones out there that, you know, do have overhead to help deliver food and get it to places, and we can go on about that. But ultimately, you know, a lot of these places do have corporate salaries and people making, you know, which they should. People need a right to live, but they're making money, you know, on top of an unmoneyed person. And I think that, like, you know, true love is really just recognizing that, you know, you are that person standing in front of you. And maybe we do need to, you know, participate in a more direct way, not be so separate. Because that is like, you know, a loving gesture. You know, I see you. You are human. I am human. How can I help?
And there's so many cases of misappropriation of funds.
You know, there is. And there's one other side I want to say before I like take this back. Is a lot of times, you know, I feel like in American culture, we have this sense of entitlement where it's this is happening to you for a reason. You know, you made a mistake, so now you're an alcoholic or a drug addict on the streets with no money or this and that. But I also want to like say, maybe they're here for you. Maybe that is happening for you to test your own humanity. Of course, I'm not talking about you, Drew.
Oh, child, I just got things running all across my mind, and I just need, I'm sorry, my eyes closed because you go ahead.
But that's what I mean is, you know, like so many, like in my wounding of the Christian, you know, world that we're in, that was what like my overly Christian family, you know, would treat me as. You know, I'm not giving you a hand because this is your challenge. It's like, well, maybe I am your challenge. Maybe I am here so that you can look inside your own compassion.
It's the splat.
The splat.
That yes. Just came to me. That, you know, aside from, that came to me, and also it came to me some more in the First John, you know, the guilt and shame and the okay, I'm gonna stick to my idea. because I did not mark that verse in John, but it's basically the idea that Jesus' suffering took care of the, that's what you get for misbehaving. We are human and expected to sin. It's part of the condition until we learn and become disciplined and find comfort and bravery and courage to move through what the sin is, which if we talk about commandments and rules for ways of being human as being the core of, for lack of a better word, sin. And, you know, in my studying and understanding the definitions of these words, just this is whole other shows, y'all. There's just so many shows where we're going to pick apart all of this. But the point being that there are choices. So if you choose to do wrong, quote unquote, there's that. And then there's the affliction, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't personally believe that an affliction can be necessarily seen as a choice all the time.
Right.
We are afflicted with things. And so, the unhoused person, the alcoholic person, in many cases, and this isn't really popular to say, but the abuser, they're afflicted because of things that were done to them, mm-hmm. Systemically and generationally. And that's not to say that they don't have a responsibility to their own care and well-being. But I just want to differentiate. And so when we look at what happens with that effect of gravity, you are a physical manifestation, a personification of the splat that the society has in a sense kicked you off of the building and then turned away from your mess on the sidewalk.
Yeah.
And so in a way of saying you're here for the other person, it's not like we're going to bring Matt into birth to suffer so that he can be an example to his neighbor of what not to do. Mm. It's like, let's be mindful of how our actions affect every single person.
That's right.
Right. Does that make any sense?
So much. I see you wanting to go back there. You got another chapter picked out?
Paragraph. Let's see. So, yes, it was a continuation. Page 13, the very next paragraph from where I left off is, my friends, that attitude is destroying the soul of our culture. That's the 11th commandment. Just don't get caught.
Right, right.
It's destroying our nation. The thing that we need in the world today is a group of men and women who will stand up for right and to be opposed to wrong wherever it is.
Mm-hmm.
A group of people who have come to see that some things are wrong, whether they're never caught up with. And some things are right, whether nobody sees you doing them or not.
Mm-hmm.
All I'm trying to say to you is that our world hinges on moral foundations. God has made it so. God has made the universe to be based on moral law. So long as man disobeys it, he is revolting against God. That is what we need in the world today. People who will stand for right and goodness. It is not enough to know the intricacies of zoology and biology, but we must know the intricacies of law. It is not enough to know 2 and 2 make 4, but we've got to know somehow that it's right to be honest and just with our brothers.
Yes.
It's not enough to know all about our philosophical and mathematical disciplines. But we've got to know the simple disciplines of being honest and loving and just with all humanity.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't learn it, we will destroy ourselves by the misuse of our own powers.
Yeah.
Period. Period. Mic drop.
That's it. You know, right before we got there and we're talking, the previous part before I interrupted, whoever can be the slickest is the one who's right. It was right before we got there to the, you know, just don't get caught, 11th commandment, right? Mm-hmm. And look at our culture. Look at the Musks and the Bezos and the Buffetts and all these people who exploit everybody else and then tell us, oh, you just have to be smart to get like me. It's not just a given, and it's this lie, and they're just slickly doing it. And then you look down to like, okay, well, we understand that there's a problem with the climate. We understand that there's some issues going on, that we're experiencing, you know, 100-year floods and 100-year storms every 2 weeks, yeah. Right? But look at this new BMW. Mm-hmm. Look at this slick new ride I've got. It's a V12.
Don't you want one?
Kind of. No.
But let me tell you this. The truth will out.
Yes.
As the British saying goes, I don't know. I first heard it on Harry Potter. Weasley's dad.
All right.
The truth will out. But it's true. Like, because they ain't so slick no more.
Right.
Here's the part of the awakening that's happening mm-hmm. on a massive scale. Is speaking of scales. Oh my Lord, I'm in church now. Speaking of scales, all you right. got to take them off your eyes, my brother.
Come on.
You know. You got to take the scales off your eyes.
Yeah.
Because, you know, those of us who choose to see is right in front of us.
Absolutely.
And those who thought they were slick,
mm-hmm.
they ain't getting away with it anymore.
No.
Your former president
that's
sitting
right.
up there, like $454 million or something. They say he's going to sell all his stuff
mm-hmm.
because he's caught.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Elon Musk, all these people, you go into outer space. I see you. We see your workers out on the street. We see them picketing. We see the cost of living. We see your indulgence. I can't even watch television anymore because I see straight through the nonsense.
Exactly.
And I think so many people, if they choose to, can wake up to the it's not working anymore. Folks aren't getting away. And we know it.
It's happening.
So how come and this is just why I'm here doing what I'm doing, trying to maintain courage in it is to be with folks who are choosing to wake up in a public forum to say, hey, you're not, like you said, the last sentence in this paragraph of Bell Hooks is you're not alone.
Yeah. Yeah. The very last sentence. That's right.
We're together in this caravan,
mm-hmm.
you know, walking.
And that, you know, that's something that's going to bring me back to DJ Little Queen Trash Mouth
mm-hmm.
Brings up quite a bit. You know, two things. One is mutual aid, and in the context often with global strike, because mm-hmm. this world isn't working for us anymore.
Mm-mm.
And so what can we do so that we can all, like, you know, let them know, hey, this is going to stop. And we're seeing it happen in so many different ways. And I want to go back to Bell Hooks now, because she mentions this over on values, of course, but on page 97, two parts in here. This is what I'm saying is like a direct response, right? And the context behind this, ahead of it, you know, they are referring to the patriarchy and how oftentimes we see so much violence and horrible things on imagery on TV, right? Movies and whatnot, glorifying, you know, horrible things that we do to each other, and we just kind of like push it aside. Well, now we're not seeing it just in movies, but we're seeing it in real life.
Oh, been, you know? That, yeah.
And so what she goes on to say down below, right, the very last two sentences of the second to last paragraph, and then right below that, I'm going to read excerpts, like I'm skipping the verses. They need a consumer audience to whom they can sell their product.
Mm-hmm.
Therein lies our power to demand change. All right, now we're going to skip down a little bit. We can exercise that power all the time by not choosing to invest time, energy, or funds to support the production and dissemination of mass media images that do not reflect life-enhancing values that undermine a love ethic. And I just want to like say, in addition, we can exercise that power by supporting and investing time, energy, or funds into a love ethic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people, we've been brought up to believe that violence is interesting and cool. And the reason is because it gets results,
mm-hmm.
like what Dr. King was saying, is that if it works, then it's right. So beating people up, killing people, putting up walls, participating in wars, you get a certain quick result with violence, but it's not a lasting result.
Right.
Because then that person will rise.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it's and it also has been used to feed the fear of us to keep us behaving properly. I mean, that's the colonizer's number one weapon is violence, and number two is probably disease. I would like to make my direct correlation to what Dr. King is asking, that what we need are people to stand up and fight for what's right.
I want to say, and we need to support people who are standing up and fighting for what's right, or and loving for what's right.
Yes. Yes. And out in the open, you know what I mean? Not just to the side where nobody can see or hear you, but right. Out in the open, you know, let's see. It was in my notes, page 90 to 91. Okay. In Bell Hooks All About Love, New Visions, she says, refusal to stand up for what you believe in weakens individual morality and ethics, as well as those of the culture. No wonder, then, that we are a nation of people, the majority of whom across race, class, and gender claim to be religious, claim to believe in the divine power of love, and yet collectively remain unable to embrace a love ethic and allow it to guide behavior, especially if doing so would mean supporting radical change. Fear of radical change leads many citizens of our nation to betray their minds and hearts. And as to the bottom of that paragraph, obviously it is not in the interest of the conservative status quo to encourage us to confront our collective fear of love. An overall cultural embrace of a love ethic would mean that we would all oppose much of the public policy conservatives condone and support. Society's collective fear of love must be faced if we are to lay claim to a love ethic that can inspire us and give us the courage to make necessary changes.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
So we got about 20 minutes before I want to be out of this chair and make room for Wes and Lobster Garden. This is Dream Queen sitting in for DJ Barnacle with Icky Mac.
Hello.
Of Nothing Sacred here on KMRD, Friday nights, 9 to midnight, Mountain Time. And I appreciate this rise and shine with you, my brother.
I appreciate being here, my sister.
So, we're going to go on to the second thing. We're in the book club, and we are rediscovering lost values. That's the first sermon in A Knock at Midnight from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. I'm going to read from page 15. And then there is a second thing, a second principle that we've got to go back and rediscover. I think you should, read the little, italics.
I almost have it.
You were like,
Yeah.
You know, and we can do Let's do this. So I want to tell you, listeners, if you don't have your copy of the book, and I skipped the introduction here because I wanted to get right into the meat of it. The introduction was very heady. If you thought that I was academic at first, it's even worse. But one of the features of this book, and the audiobooks are available, that and the recorded speeches. These are collections of speeches, and a lot of these are taken as transcripts from recordings that Dr. King did in the various churches and different public places where he spoke. There, I think, are a couple that are manuscripts, but for the most part, these are spoken sermons. And in italics and parentheses, they have transcribed even the members of the congregation, most likely deacons, because they're near the microphone.
Makes sense.
That are saying their.
And I'm gonna support this role of
deacon. Let's do it for a second.
Let's do it. Let's try it. Let's give this
out. All right. I don't know if it's
start over. Okay. Come on.
All right. Page 15. And then there is a second thing, a second principle that we've got to go back and rediscover.
Help him.
Do it lower, though. You got to be in the background. I got you. And that is that all reality has spiritual control. In other words, we've got to go back and rediscover the principle that there is a God behind the process. Well, this is to say, why is it that you raise that as a point in your sermon in a church? The mere fact we are at church, we believe in God. We don't need to go back and rediscover that. The mere fact that we are here and the mere fact that we sing and pray and come to church, we believe in God. Well, there's some truth in that, but we must remember that it's possible to affirm the existence of God with your lips and deny his existence with your life.
Amen. Preach.
The most dangerous type of atheism is not theoretical atheism, but practical atheism.
Amen.
That's the most dangerous type.
Lord have mercy.
And the world, even the church, is filled up with people who pay lip service to God and not life service.
That's right. Filled up with. Come on. And Lord, help them.
And there is always a danger that we will make it appear externally that we believe in God when internally we don't.
Yes.
We say with our mouths that we believe in him, but we live with our lives like he never existed.
That's right.
That is the ever-present danger confronting religion. That's a dangerous type of atheism. And I think we can leave out the chorus there. But I'm going to yield for a moment to you, and we're getting close to the end of the sermon, but I wanted to let you speak on that if you had something that you wanted to address.
I'm still reflecting on that.
Okay.
That is very perfect. And, mm-hmm. you know, I say I'm still reflecting on that because I have spent so much time moving away from Christianity, going away from the sermon, going away from these, that, you know, I'm starting to really re-question it as we're going through this now. You know, am I going away from the sermon? Am I going away from these preachers? Or am I going away from the culture? Hmm. Am I going away from the society that we have built for ourselves? And am I moving towards one that we can build together? That's what I hear. Hmm. You know, there's the church is filled up. Mm-hmm. But is everybody really worshiping the source energy? Mm. Is everybody really, you know, celebrating the people around them even? Mm. Are they celebrating themselves being in a place that they can be seen, for one example? Mm-hmm. You know, right before we did this segment, you know, we were talking about standing up and doing that. And I was hitchhiking through the country. And at one point I found myself in Sedona, Arizona. And it was a very touristy place, and all the businesses were just shooing my group and I, you know, away from everywhere. And we were just walking along, and this one person in my group, you know, just started yelling at the top of their lungs, "Hate is not a family value. Hate is not a family value." And we're just like, "What is going on?" He just keeps getting louder and louder and louder, and he's addressing it. And of course, so we see what he's talking about, and now the subject of who he's talking about sees that, you know, this is going on. And it was a man beating his son in a, like, Burger King parking lot. Mm. And, you know, my friend is yelling. So naturally, this guy immediately is like, "Oh, you want to tell me what to do with my family?" Mm-hmm. And then he starts seeing that not only are these hippie kids walking by, but now everybody coming out of this place is looking at him. And there was this moment where all the people around, you know, were unified, mm-hmm. and looking at this one man who now was retreating within himself. Maybe embarrassment, maybe shame came over him. And I can't say what happened next. I can say that the violence stopped, mm-hmm. and that he got his son back in the car. He got in the car and he went on his day. And I can only hope something good came out of that. But what I want to reflect on, talking about this segment, the church, about are we there? And that one moment, all these different people, some of them who were shooing us off of their businesses so that they could make their money, some of them who were, you know, getting this, you know, just brushing us off the sidewalk, you know, move along, move along. We all unified for a common purpose. So it can happen. And for a moment, we were all there present, and maybe we were like communally with source energy.
Hmm. Well, I appreciate that story because, you know, I was quite moved by things that I was seeing in the news, and namely a couple years ago where a woman was brutalized and sexually assaulted on a New York subway.
Yeah, I know the story.
In front of God and everybody, and nobody stopped it. And so, and you know, what I feel like the minimum that I am asking for as I work to with others to raise the vibration of human's presence on this planet is a return to some sort of balance, that for every action, there's a equal and opposite reaction. Part of my spiritual practice is to understand that there is more good than evil in the world, more light than darkness, but the presence is both. And I think if we look at the scales, we're always tipped to the good. Even if it's the fact that the sun came up today, you can add that right next to, you know, public awareness or a ceasefire or, you know, a temporary allowment of aid to starving and destroyed people. 100 trucks is better than one truck or no trucks. Yeah. And then we add the fact that the breeze is blowing and the sun came up this morning and I have clothes on and food to eat. We're doing great. You know what I mean? Right. And so I recovered what had fleeted through my mind earlier, the thought that I lost. And that's the inspiration where you were saying, trying to stay mindful and help yourself remember your purpose and how to stand against the negative vibrations that's coming your way. And I've had a hard time with that for the past couple of weeks. And I said it in the first hour where music helps me. When I was having a really hard time, it was probably about 10 days ago, I was like, I can't find comfort anywhere, you know? And so what I did was I picked up this book and I was like, I guess if I can't find comfort and I hate everybody right now and I want to return to rage, I should probably get started on Dr. King.
Yeah.
And I got through the lengthy, heady introduction, this first sermon and the next one, and I was able to sleep. And and it, you know, to use the tools that are around us and be comforted, that's part of the mutual aid, the good stuff that's here to help us. We can't always find it inside of ourselves at any given moment. We have to reach outside, and that's why art exists. Why the recordings of these wise thoughts persist, is because, you know, what do we do in that dark night of the soul? Other than give in to the darkness, we find that, like Leonard Cohen says, there's a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. That's right. I think that's a quote from a quote, but yes.
You know, what if one person had stood up on that subway? What if one person had? Would other people have had the courage? Because that's all it took. I mean, we talk about this, you know, in Bell Hooks' book, you know. So if we see someone stand up, maybe we need to immediately stand up too.
Yes.
Right. And we need to like help out, because that's what happened in that Burger King parking lot that was missing on the subway, was fear overtook everybody. Right. Everybody's afraid to stand up and to bring attention, because it might slow their day down. It might delay their day. They might have to give a police report. They might have to confront someone. But we have to do the work and we have to like support those who are doing the work.
It's courage. It's the courage. That's how come the ancestors are so important. It's how come, you know, a lot of people are, you know, and even now, because we get our courage from those who came before us through horrors.
Yes.
Horrors that the establishment is trying to say never happened, undervalued, devised. You're going crazy. But I know what my predecessors bared, and they give me strength.
Yeah.
you know, and I know, and that's the other part about fear and spirituality, is that if you understand the transmigration of the soul, okay, look that up, people. Mm-hmm. If you understand that energy can neither be created nor destroyed, mm-hmm. and I'm going to go on this real quick, because King and Hooks both covered this, that it's not, we have nothing to fear in this temporary world. And there are people who, The Color Purple, which we got to go and watch the first one, you know, like life is temporary, heaven lasts always or something like this. And there, it's seen as oftentimes a weakness to look to heaven for salvation, especially for people who are suffering here on earth in the now. But again, Jesus was in his Father's house listening to the masters, the energy, the people who know the truth of our origins and the extension that this isn't it.
Right.
It's not it. Even the houseless people have life.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So we're going to go to page 15, Rediscovering Lost Values. Let's see. Oh, wait. That's the practical atheism. Okay. The bottom of the page. And I think, my friends, that this is the thing that has happened in America, that we have unconsciously left God behind. Now, we haven't consciously done it. We have unconsciously done it. You see, the text, you remember the text said that Jesus' parents were a whole day's journey, not knowing that he wasn't with them. They didn't consciously leave him behind. It was unconscious. Spent a whole day and didn't even know it. It wasn't a conscious process. You see, we didn't grow up and say, now goodbye, God, we're going to leave you now. The materialism in America has been an unconscious thing. Since the rise of the Industrial Revolution in England and then the invention of all of our gadgets and contrivances and all of the things and modern conveniences, we unconsciously left God behind. We didn't mean to do it. And then King goes into talking about bank accounts, luxurious cars, television. Yeah. And then at page 17 at the top, we just became so involved in things that we forgot about God.
Oh, yes.
And I want to also say that, drawing this to back to All About Love, New Visions, Bell Hooks, page 98, if all public policy was created, yes, in the spirit of love, we would not have to worry about unemployment, homelessness, schools failing to teach children, or addiction.
Yes.
Were a love ethic informing all public policy in cities and towns, individuals would come together and map out programs that would affect the good of everyone. And so the thing is that as we turn away, it wasn't a conscious turning. It was, I got to get this paper, because if I don't, I'm going to be on the street. If I don't, my kid ain't going to eat. If I don't, then I'm not going to have clothes to wear. If I don't, then I'm going to be, you know, sick and can't afford. And so we look up and it's like, nothing matters but this paper now.
That's it. That's right.
Because that's what I need to live. So, you know, I challenge to look at that for those of you who check out this book, to just go a little bit deeper, and that there are things, you know, Dr. King wasn't perfect, but we put these two texts next to each other and we can really, you know, start to understand our condition.
Yes.
And I want to continue and begin to close. We got about 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. Page 17 of A Knock at Midnight. And I may say to you this morning that none of these things can ever be real substitutes for God. Automobiles and subways, televisions and radios, dollars and cents can never be substitutes for God.
Amen.
For long before any of these came into existence, we needed God.
Amen. Yes.
And long after they will have passed away, we will still need God.
Oh, yeah.
And I say to you this morning in conclusion,
Lord have mercy,
that I am not going to put my ultimate faith in things. I'm not going to put my ultimate faith, my ultimate faith in gadgets and contrivances. As a young man with most of my life ahead of me, I decided early to give my life to something eternal and absolute.
All right.
Not to these little gods that are here today and gone tomorrow, all right, but to God who is the same yesterday, today, and forever.
Amen, amen.
Not in the little gods that can be with us in a few moments of prosperity,
yes,
but in the God who walks with us through the valley of the shadow of death.
That's right.
And causes us to fear no evil.
All right.
That's the God.
Come on.
That's it. That's mic drop on period from Dr. King, is that that's the case. You just look around and it's like, how did my ancestors manage to bring me here? Given the history of oppression and violence and undermining and depravity that was practiced on all colonized people.
Right.
I mean, they didn't have all the things, and they were constantly under threat, but they managed to be ministers and teachers and parents. And I think it's just really important to know that it's faith, that it's a steadfastness. It wasn't a promise from a president that got anybody here.
Right.
It was diligence and the understanding that we got to stay true, that we are supported, that it's eternal.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know that you've been on the street. So obviously a losing of a house is not the end of life.
It's momentary.
Exactly. And that's the point. You still been through a lot, lost a lot, gained a lot,
mm-hmm,
and are still here today,
yes,
under all kinds of challenges.
Mm-hmm.
And
getting better all the time.
Getting better all the time. Because of that light, that source energy that is telling you, hey, there's more than just the money, the car, the housing. Because we can find that,
yeah,
through the God and everybody else that's
right,
out here doing the work to get some food to you, to get you a place to stay, to get you what you need. It's happened to me. I feel like I don't have what I need. People come up from their God consciousness,
mm-hmm,
and provide it. So I'm not even worried about Elon,
right,
Musk.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I am, but not really,
because
they're going to go up there and they're going to be gone. And I say,
yes,
up there, it's out of space.
Yeah.
And even if the whole world collapses tomorrow, guess what? We're stardust, bro.
Yeah. We're still
What's
here.
The new adventure?
That's it.
There's billions of worlds. Bad DJ showed me those galaxy photos of all the different nebulas that exist, like all the different life.
You know, can I
yeah,
wrap this up a little bit?
Yeah, to wrap it up. I all see right. Wes. I'm going to pick a song while you get the last word.
Before my dad died, he was an addiction counselor.
Mm.
He shared with me a book that he read. It was by a rabbi. I don't remember his name, but maybe someone can hear the words I'm saying and help direct me to which one. And that's my purpose of telling you that.
Mm.
And he was telling me that addiction is like this. You know, we are free falling. And so we start reaching out for things to hold on to, whether it be material objects, whether it be drugs and alcohol, whether it be attention, whether it be sex, whether it be power. We reach out for these things to hold on to because we're so afraid of falling. We're so afraid that the gravitation is going to bring us down and splat, we're gone. But the truth is, this is loosely quoting the book from as told to me by my dad, is that the true nature of humanity is constant free fall and that there is no ground to hit.
That's right. Safety is an illusion.
Safety is an illusion.
Amen.
Amen.
Amen. Hey, thanks all y'all for hanging out, coming to church on Saturday.
We'll see you tomorrow.
Yeah. We're going to check you out next week with Paul's letter to American Christians. That is the second sermon in A Knock at Midnight, our book club reading, inspiration from the great sermons of Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. Thank you to my guest, Icky Mack.
Thank you.
We're going to be seeing you again in here.
All right.
I got some other people who's going to be coming in. We got the books. Mm-hmm. And check out Icky Mac on Instagram and DreamQueen_3AM on Instagram. Check out KMRD on Instagram and KMRD.FM. And you can find out about us. And I'm going to make room for Wes and Lobster Garden. But you follow any of these threads and you can get in touch with us and maybe get you a book and a guest spot in the chair over here.
Let's be friends.
Let's be friends. Love y'all. Thanks for tuning in. It's been a real, real pleasure. Be light.
Be light.